Today is January 24th, Sunday morning at Sharei Tefillah, and we are studying Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Mishnah and Talmud, the beginning of the fourth perek. And since Ben just practiced reading it, at least the first line read for us and explain it, what it means.
Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shechal Liyot B'Shabbat. So Yom Tov Shel Rosh
Hashanah.
So I'll tell you what it means, but I don't know if I can break it down again. You said when a Yom Tov falls on Shabbat, or when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat.
Well, actually, you didn't read yet the rest of the sentence. You read Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah, which is the good day, the holiday, Shel of Rosh Hashanah.
So,
that's the holiday of Rosh Hashanah.
Shechal Lehayot B'Shabbat.
Right. Shechal, two words, that falls. Lehayot B'Shabbat, that falls. What does liot mean?
To be
on Shabbat. So Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shechal Liot B'Shabbat, the Yom Tov, the holiday of Rosh Hashanah that falls to be on Shabbat. That's the background, right? That's the scenario. B'Mikdash Hayu Tokaim, in the Mikdash, in the Beit HaMikdash, in the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, Hayu Tokim, they would, Hayu, did, were, used to, they used to tokin, from the language of tikia, of tokea, they used to blow the shofar. Aval lo b'midina, but not in the midina, whatever midina means. So even though we're talking about Rosh Hashanah, which has of course the mitzvah of blowing the shofar, they didn't blow the shofar sometimes when it fell on Shabbat. In the midina they didn't blow the shofar, but in the mikdash they did. So there's a distinction between different geographical locations, even though it's the same holiday, it's the same day. Some places are blowing the shofar, some places they aren't. Okay? We'll have to understand why. And then the next line.
Because it's Shabbat.
Because it's Shabbat, right. Had it been not Shabbat, had it been Chol, then of course you blow the shofar, whether it's in the Mikdash or in the Midina, wherever it is, blow the shofar.
Right.
But there's something about Shabbat that prevents you from blowing the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, some places, but not other places. There's a distinction.
I wonder if the city Medina is related to this word.
Of course it is. The word Medina
in Arabic,
there's the same basic root. It's a place, it's a city, it's a state, it's a country, it's a province. Misha'charav Beit HaMikdash Hitkin Rabban Yohanan Ben Zakkai Sheyehu Tok'in Bechol Makom Sheyesh Bo Beit Din. Going back to where we began, the middle of the last line on the right-hand column, Mi She'charav Beit HaMikdash. The first word is really three words, Mi She'charav, which is that from that was destroyed. Charav is destroyed, language of Chorban, destruction. Mi She'charav. From that was destroyed. In other words, from the point when was destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, then Hitkin Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. Hitkin is a verb, and we know the noun takana. A takana is a decree or an ordinance. Hitkin means to decree. So, from the point when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai decreed. What did he decree? So it's now the fourth word on the left-hand column. What did he decree? Sheyehu tok'in v'chol makom sheyesh bo beitin. Sheyehu is two words, she, yehu, that, yehu, yehu, it's just like the word hayu that we just had. And it means that will, right, we had hayu, that's was, or were, or did, or used to. And now it's in the future, Yehu, that they will be tokin, they will blow, b'chol makom, in every place, she yesh bo beitin, that there is in it a beitin. So let's just see the stages here, historical stages. We're talking about Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat. Doesn't happen every year, once every 3 or 4 years, falls on Shabbat. What do you do? In the Mikdash they used to blow the shofar. In every other place, the Medina, they didn't blow the shofar. But after the destruction of the temple, when there's no longer Jews in Yerushalayim, the city is basically emptied of Jews, and we know the Sanhedrin moved under the leadership of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, moved to where? What city?
Yavne.
Okay. Mr. Geller comes through in the clutch. The Sanhedrin moved to Yavne, which these days is really only 15 minutes inland from Ashdod and Ashkelon. 15-minute drive today. It's between Gush Etzion and Ashdod. So the Sanhedrin moved to Yavne, and there were no Jews in Jerusalem, which means there's now no place that they'll be blowing on Shabbat, because the Jews aren't in Jerusalem anymore. They're not in the Mikdash. There's no Mikdash. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai decreed that they'll be blowing the shofar in every place sheyesh bo beit, in every place that has a beit din. Whatever that means. We'll get back to it. And then it says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, said Rabbi Elazar, Lo hitkin Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai ela bayavne bilvad. Translation, going back to the second line, the third word, Lo hitkin didn't decree Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai ela vayavne bilvad, except in Yavne exclusively. Only in Yavne. Right? So there seems to be a machloket. One opinion said that the takana was, the decree was, that they blow the shofar in kol makom, every place that has a beit din. The second opinion says only in Yavne. Only where the Sanhedrin is sitting presently. You're with me?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Then ask a question.
Repeat the last line you said.
There's a machloket. The first opinion on the first line of the column is that to blow the shofar in every place, bechol makom, sheyesh bo beit din, that there's a beit din. Every place where there's a beit din.
Which at that time was in Yavne, which later would be in...
We'll have to ask ourselves about that.
Okay.
But at least in theory, every place that's a beit din, they blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah that was in Shabbat. But Rabbi Elazar says no, that only in Yavne did they blow the shofar. Only in Yavne. And then the third opinion.
He's saying that Rabbi Yochanan said no.
Very, very good point.
Yeah.
Let's wait a second on that.
Okay.
I just want to get the very, very basic words, and then okay, there's at least 20 different questions we can ask on everything we've read, and that's one of them. So the beginning of the third line, Amrulo, Echad Yavne, Vechad Kol Makom, Sheyesh bo beit din. Translation, they said to him, in other words, they said to Rabbi Elazar, someone's objecting to Rabbi Elazar, what they said to him is, one Yavne, and one every place, that there is a beit din. Now the phrase one X and one Y, we've learned in the past, and it means whether this or that. We had it in Masechet Brachot, we had Ahad hamarbe, v'had hamamit, uvirvad shichaven libo l'shamayim, which literally means one, the person who says a lot, one a person that says little, as long as he directs his heart to heaven. In other words, whether you say a lot of prayers, whether you say a little, doesn't matter, as long as you direct your heart to heaven. Ahad this and ahad that means whether this or that. So he's saying, whether Yavne or whether any place that has a beit din.
Did they have more cities to have beit din?
Oh, that's a good question. And that's connected to the question that Brooks asks.
Yeah.
And also that you started to bring up.
Yavne had a beit din, but how about other cities?
So that depends on the question of what type of beit din we're talking about.
Right.
A beit din of 71, or a beit din of 23, or a beit din of 3.
Right.
Three different levels of beit din. Which are we talking about? Not clear.
Was there only one Sanhedrin?
Yes.
And only that's one the Beit Din of 70.
That's the Beit Din of 71.
Right.
And that's what they had in Yavne, in Beit Din of 71.
Right.
There were Beit Din of 23 and three in other cities, but are we talking about those other Beit Din or not? Not clear.
Not clear.
Not clear. Not clear. So let's now go back and read the Mishnah again, very, very slowly, and try and examine every single word and every single phrase. So the beginning of the Mishnah was, Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shechal Liyot B'Shabbat, which means the holiday of Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat. Now, there are two comments I want to make. One is the third word of the Mishnah, Shel Rosh Hashanah. Just so everyone realizes that in modern Hebrew, the word Shel is an independent, what's it called, preposition? Preposition, of. But in Mishnaic Hebrew, it's a suffix. A prefix. It's part of the word. Shel.
Oh.
Right, so don't get confused. In the Mishnah, it's a prefix. In later Hebrew, it becomes an independent word.
Use that in the later Hebrew, the shell?
We don't use it as a prefix. We use it as a separate word. There's a space.
Right, a separate word, yeah.
Now, if in the Mishnah you ever see shell printed as a separate word, it simply means that later copyists copied it with their own Hebrew in mind, with medieval Hebrew in mind, instead of preserving the Mishnaic form, which is as one word. But there's no difference in meaning. So anyway, it's about the Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat. Now that phrase itself is extremely strange. Like I wrote in the first question on the sheet, it says, what is strange about the opening phrase, Yom Tov Rishon Shel Rosh Hashanah? We'd never use that phrase in our language. And let me give you an example, a hint why. For Pesach and for Sukkot, you certainly would say Yom Tov of Sukkot or Yom Tov of Pesach. But in Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur or Shavuot, you'd never say that. Why?
It's one day? Well, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. So what does Pesach and Sukkot have that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Shavuot doesn't have?
What does Pesach have?
What does Pesach and Sukkot have?
Yes.
What does Pesach and Sukkot have that Shavuot doesn't have, Yom Kippur doesn't have, Rosh Hashanah doesn't have?
Two Shabbats.
Very good. And therefore, what else does Pesach and Sukkot have that all the other holidays don't have?
Multiple days.
But still more specific.
The more possibility of it falling on Shabbat?
No.
Okay.
Chol HaMoed.
Oh.
The intermediate days.
Almost intermediate days.
In other words, when I say Pesach, you say which quality of Pesach?
Right.
The holiday days of Pesach or the
Chol HaMoed?
Yom Tov Chol HaMoed. But if I say Shanah, you don't ask me, did you mean Chol HaMoed or did you mean the holiday? There is no Chol HaMoed. If I say Shavuot, you know it's talking about the holiday. If I say Pesach, you don't know if I mean the holiday days or the Chol HaMoed days. Right? Therefore, the phrase Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah is meaningless. There's no such thing as saying Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah. Is there a Rosh Hashanah that's not Yom Tov? No, there's not.
It's superfluous.
So we have to ask ourselves, and by the way, there's no good answer to the question, but we have to ask ourselves anyway, why the Mishnah uses the phrase Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah? It's really a waste of words. It should just say Rosh Hashanah. We'll get back to that, but not with a completely satisfying answer.
It should say Barosh Hashanah Shechol.
Yeah, that's all.
But with a base.
No, without a base. It just should say Rosh Hashanah, Shechal Liot B'Shabbat.
Right.
And Yom Tov only has one meaning. It only refers to the Chag.
Yes.
Whatever it is. Nothing else.
Yep. Yom Tov is Yom Tov. So anyway, we're talking about Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat. Falls on Shabbat. And then the law is that in the Mikdash, they used to blow. And in the Medina, they didn't blow. That's what it says, right? Now, we're going to have to ask ourselves a question. What does Mikdash mean and what does Medina mean? What's clear is that Mikdash and Medina taken together refer to the whole world. The Mikdash refers to a certain place Everything else is Medina. But there's still two possible ways of cutting the cake. Two possible ways of understanding what Mikdash refers to, and therefore what Medina refers to. So what's our first, of course, intuition? What is Mikdash? Mikdash is Mikdash. What is Mikdash really? Geographically, what is Mikdash? Tell me exactly.
Har HaBayit.
Har HaBayit, okay. Har HaBayit. It's a good possibility. You might have said, of course, just within the chel, just within the wall around the Mikdash, but Paul said it includes Har HaBayit, which is probably true. Har HaBayit. Then the rest of the world is called Medina. Could Mikdash mean anything else?
It could have been the tabernacle before.
Ah, okay. You're certainly right. But we're in a time when there's no tabernacle anymore. This is in the Second Temple period.
Oh, but it's saying before. They used to.
Yeah, it uses the word Mikdash, though. So you're right that were we to transfer this halakha thousands of years before, would probably mean in the tabernacle also. Okay. They would blow, but not anyplace else. You're right. But still, I'm going to ask now, Mikdash can refer to the Har HaBayit, to the Temple Mount. What else might it be? Is there anything more expansive?
The Holy Temple.
Okay, but that's the Har HaBayit, right?
Har HaBayit, yeah. A Mikdash could mean...
Could it mean anything else?
The base of Mikdash.
Right, that's what we're saying. Anything else? Anything more expansive?
Jerusalem,
very good.
Jerusalem?
Very good, right.
The whole of Jerusalem.
Right, Jerusalem is called Ir HaMikdash.
Oh, Ir HaMikdash, yeah.
Right? So it could be that Mikdash means the whole city. And if it means the whole city, then Medina means anything outside of Jerusalem.
Right? Jerusalem.
In other words, the meaning of Medina is whatever Mikdash isn't. If Mikdash is only the building itself, then Medina is everything else, including Yerushalayim.
Medina is a country.
If Mikdash includes Yerushalayim, then Medina is everything outside of Yerushalayim. Let's see now, let's stop for a minute and see the machloket, the argument between Rashi and Rambam over this question. So Rashi is on the Gemara. Right, here's the page from the Gemara. You got it. And the Mishnah is printed, of course, in the middle, and then the Gemara is after the Mishnah. And in the upper right-hand corner is Rashi in very small print. And I have a little arrow pointing at it. See the arrow?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Up the top.
There's an arrow.
That's a different arrow.
Oh, that's on there.
So this is Rashi. He says, "Avalo b'Medina." What does it mean? Not in the Medina? Anyone can read the Rashi, Mr. Geller.
It says lo b'Yerushalayim.
Right.
But lo b'Gvulin.
Right. Right. So
not in Jerusalem, and not even Jerusalem. They did not blow the shofar.
Right. Not in Jerusalem.
Only
in
the holy Har HaBayit.
Right.
Yeah.
So Rashi says, like Paul said, that Medina excludes Yerushalayim.
Yeah.
And also excludes Gvulin. Gvulin means the borders. Gvulin, everything
the
outside
borders
of Yerushalayim.
Of the Yerushalayim, yeah.
But Rashi says Medina excludes Yerushalayim. So it means it's only the Mikdash.
Right, right.
But if we look at the Rambam, which is at the bottom of the sheet. It's the Rambam's commentary on the Mishnah.
What sheet is that? The Mishnah.
The other one.
The other sheet. Down here. So the Rambam says, in my bracket, Kfar bi'arnu lecha, already we explained to you, Chama pamim, a number of times, Ki mikdash nikret Yerushalayim kula.
Yeah.
That mikdash is called Yerushalayim, all of it. Umidina, and Midina, Shar Eretz Yisrael, the rest of Eretz Yisrael.
He differs with Rashi.
Differs with Rashi. That's the Machloket.
Yeah.
Machloket Rashi in the Rambam. Again, Rashi says that they used to blow only in the building itself, or Har HaBayit. The rest of the world, including Yerushalayim, didn't blow, and Rosh Hashanah falls in Shabbat. That's Rashi. The Rambam says no. Rambam says that Mikdash means the Ir HaMikdash, the city of the Mikdash. And that's where they blew, and Rosh Hashanah that falls in Shabbat. And it's only outside of the city that they didn't blow, and Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat. So that's Rashi, the Rambam. And as we read on in the Mishnah, we'll have to ask ourselves, is there any proof for either of the two approaches? in the rest of the Mishnah and in the next Mishnah. Okay, so now back to the Mishnah. Back to the Mishnah. And back to the question sheets, of course. So now let's think now. The halakha we've learned is that whatever mikdash means, there we blow on Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat, and in the Midinah we don't. So we have to examine now why this distinction between mikdash and Midinah. And as we begin to examine the distinction, the first question we have to ask is which of the two halachot, the halacha of mikdash or the halacha of Midinah, which is intuitive? In other words, which is what you would think according to the Torah? And which is an aberration has to be explained. Which is an innovation, aberration has to be explained. So what would we think? According to the Torah, do you blow the Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat?
According to the Torah?
Yeah. By the way, it's an easy question. Whatever you say can have a foundation.
Yeah. Okay, so I was saying just the temple.
Oh, wait a second. I didn't ask that. I said, according to the Torah,
yes.
What is your first intuition that on Rosh Hashanah, that falls on Shabbat, you blow the shofar, you don't blow? Forget about distinctions. You say don't blow. Okay, why not?
Why don't we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah on Shabbat?
Yeah, not we, but according to the Torah. According to your first intuition, what would you think you do?
Blow.
Brooke says blow, and Paul says don't blow.
Can't give you a good reason, though.
I can't give you a good reason, either.
No, you can give a good reason. Of course you can give a good reason for what you said. Because it says blow.
Yeah.
Right? In the Torah, where it says blow neshana, it doesn't mention anything about Shabbat. It doesn't mention Tuesday. It doesn't mention the weather. It doesn't mention the sun's out. It just says, Rosh Hashanah, blow the shofar. So you blow the shofar. That is, according to the Torah, our first intuition should be that if it's Rosh Hashanah, you blow it. Shabbat, so what? So what? It says, blow the shofar. And that's the halacha and the mikdash. But it says in the Midinah, we don't blow. So we have to ask why. We understand why we blow in the Mikdash, because the Torah says blow. It's Rosh Hashanah. What do you want? But if we don't blow in the Midinah, why? So let's think why. And the truth is, it's hard to think why. If the Torah says blow, why should we not blow? Right? So here we come to the famous, famous, famous Gemara that explains why you wouldn't blow.
Right.
And Mr. Gal, do you know why wouldn't you blow the shofar on...
Because it's a job. You're not supposed to work in Shabbat.
No, your influence, what you read a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
I think you knew the answer before you read it. And it's something...
The rabbis come along to tell us that if we would come to carry it and blow it, then we don't blow it for that reason,
right.
Because it would be muksa to carry it.
Right. That's the Gemara. The Gemara says... that, and listen to this closely, the Gemara says it's permitted to blow on Shabbat. It's not a melacha. It's not a melacha.
Well, they say it's a art. Right.
It's the Gemara says it's an art and it's not a melacha. There's no melacha. There's no prohibition to write in blowing in musical instruments, including a shofar and a shana. On Shabbat, excuse me. So why don't we do it? Like Paul said, the Gemara says, we're afraid that if you're going to go and blow it, you'll carry it. And carrying is forbidden. So let's see the Gemara on that. So the Gemara is the Gemara right on the Mishnah, and it's the same piece of paper we were looking at earlier, in the Gemara. Right over there in my bracket. Can you see the bracket? It says, Damar Rava. Have a place?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Damar Rabba. Hakol chayavin b'tikiyat shofar. Ve'ein hakol b'kiyin b'tikiyat shofar. Translation. That said, Rabba. Hakol chayavin b'tikiyat shofar. All are obligated in tikiyat shofar. All are obligated in blowing the shofar.
Right.
Ve'ein hakol bikiyin b'tikiyat shofar.
Not everybody
but
knows that.
Not all are bikiyin, not all are experts in tikiyat shofar and blowing the shofar. gzeira shema yitlenu biyado v'yelech etzel habaki lilmod. Translation, gzeira, there's a gzeira, there is a rabbinic prohibition. Shema, lest, yitlenu, take it, biyadona's hand, v'yelech, and will go, etzel habaki, to a baki, to an expert, lilmod, to learn. V'yavirenu arba amot b'rishut rabim, henel, yavirenu, he will transfer it, he'll walk with it, four amot, four cubits, in the Rishut Rabim, in the public domain. Let's stop there for a second. In other words, what we're saying is something extremely radical and extremely disconcerting, extremely difficult to hear. That the rabbis are preventing us from fulfilling a mitzvah doraita, not because there's anything wrong with what we're doing, but lest we are over, lest we transgress a Isur of Shabbat, in the process of doing the mitzvah doraita. There's no direct conflict. There's no problem blowing the shofar. It's just a lest you come to do something else. And you think, goodness gracious, what's going on? Why should we put aside a certain mitzvah doraita? Because we might, for the fear of transgressing a different mitzvah doraita. It doesn't make any sense. Here you have a certainty of doing a mitzvah, which is shofar, and here you have the possibility of transgressing Shabbat. Obviously, you should blow the shofar and take the risk of transgressing, but say, don't blow, miss a mitzvah deraita, a certain mitzvah deraita, just because you might transgress a different mitzvah deraita. That's extremely difficult reasoning, and it's going to demand some difficult thinking. But that's what it says. That's what it says. And it says at the end, a few words we didn't read, Hainu tama de lulav, v'hainu tama de megillah. And it's the same reasoning for lulav, and the same reasoning for megillah. Megillah means Megillat Esther. In other words, when Sukkot, when the Yom Tov of Sukkot falls on Shabbat, we also don't take the lulav for the same reason, because we might carry it.
But they did take it in the Mikdash.
Right, in the Mikdash they did take the lulav, like the shofar.
Right.
And then there's Megillat Esther. What happens when Purim falls on Shabbat? Don't read the Megillah? So Purim's a slightly different issue because we can push Purim off to a different day, read a different day, so it's for the Rabbanan. But as far as lulav and shofar, it's really strange that the Rabbanan would cancel a mitzvah doraita just because they're afraid you might transgress a different mitzvah deraita. So if we have time today, we'll see that really there are many different opinions of understanding this matter, and there's really only one that makes sense, I think.
Is tefillin under the same idea?
No.
Or is it a different idea?
No, tefillin, we don't take on Shabbat, we don't put on Shabbat, because, for a different reason, because tefillin are an oath or a sign of God's covenant, and we don't need it on Shabbat because Shabbat is an oath. Shabbat is an oath in and of itself. It's a sign of God's covenant. Okay. So, I agree. So we read. Now we're going to go to question five. And question five is as follows. How might the possible explanations be reconciled with the statement that b'mikdash hayu tokin? Let me explain what that means. We explain that on Shabbat in the Midinah, we don't blow the shofar. But in the mikdash, we do. So now the question is, in the Mikdash, why do we? If the rabbis are so afraid that we're going to take the lulav or take the shofar and carry it, and for that reason they're willing to completely cancel the mitzvah deraita of blowing, why in the Mikdash do we anyway blow?
Well, it's a reshut hayachid.
It's a private, right? That's private a very domain. Good answer. That the Mikdash is a reshut hayachid. There's no fear there. But of course, that opens up to another question. What happens if my town in Alon Shvut, I also have Rashut Yechid because I have an Eruv?
Right.
That doesn't work.
Right. In the Mikdash, everything... The rules are different in the Mikdash.
Okay, so Paul has a second try here. His first try was because the Mikdash is Rashut Yechid, which looks like a very good answer. It's a private domain. There's no prohibition of carrying. But then he said, what about other cities that have Rashut Yechid? Let's say, what about Tzfat or Jericho that has a wall around it? It's always a Rashut Yechid. So Paul, and there we don't blow. So Paul said, okay, I threw out that explanation. Another explanation, let's just say that the Mikdash is always different. And he's right also. There's a rule that says, Ein shvut b'mikdash. There's no shvut in the mikdash. The word shvut is a technical term that refers to rabbinic prohibitions. There's no rabbinic prohibitions. I'm sorry, rabbinic prohibitions of Shabbat. Shvut, language of Shabbat. There's no rabbinic prohibitions of Shabbat in mikdash across the board. So let's just apply that rule here and say that the rabbis made a prohibition of blowing the shofar and Shana that post in Shabbat. It doesn't apply to the mikdash for a technical reason that we know that rabbinic prohibitions of Shabbat never apply in the Mikdash. Okay, that's a good try. That's good.
But and there was no concern that the Kohanim would... Break Shabbat. Right? If they were the ones to blow the shofar, then they wouldn't... I can't think of the word, but they wouldn't break Shabbat.
So you just actually... You said something good, but you actually got yourself into a pit.
Always.
Because the rule that there's no rabbinic prohibitions of Shabbat and the Mikdash really only refers to things that Kohanim do, but not things that non-Kohanim can do. And the shofar is not limited in its blowing to Kohanim. Anyone could blow the shofar. And therefore, really, the rule that says there's no shvut in the Mikdash shouldn't apply.
But in the Mikdash, only the Kohanim would blow the shofar. Is that
you
is
never
that,
know?
Is that right? Or are others able to do that?
I don't know if you're right, but you're certainly not right according to the Rambam that Mikdash means all of Yerushalayim.
Right.
Right.
But
it relates also
to the Gemara. The Gemara was talking about someone who is not an expert who might be going to learn. So.
But in Yerushalayim, there's certain people who aren't experts.
The law doesn't say that the Kohen...
Yeah, it's not just the Mikdash, right?
According to the Rambam, it's not just the Mikdash.
Right.
So actually, I wrote on the back five different possibilities for what we're asking, and Paul just got the first two, right? The first one is... See the back there? Ain't shvut to mikdash. There's no rabbinic prohibitions of Shabbat in the mikdash. And two, it's a private domain. The third is that the many sages there will be zealous to prevent tiltul. Prevent carrying. In other words, you'd say, any places in the Jewish world, you're afraid that if you allow shofar blowing on Shabbat, people might carry it to ask how to blow it.
Yeah.
But in Yerushalayim, or in the Mikdash, it won't happen, not just because there's an Eruv, but because there are so many Hachamim in the city, and especially in the Mikdash, that if anyone just started a second, one step, he'd be overcome by 20 people yelling at him to stop. Right? So that's another possibility. Yerushalayim is sui generis because it's full of Hachamim. That's a third possibility. Fourth possibility is, the rabbis just wanted somewhere where the mitzvah would continue to be filled during years of Rosh Hashanah, Pesach, and Shabbat. In other words, it's not that there's any less of a fear of carrying in Jerusalem than any other places. It's not because of the Eruv, and it's not because of the Chachamim there. It's just, in a certain sense, arbitrary. The rabbis wanted some place in the world that the shofar is blown every year. You can't have an existence, can't have a reality in which you're never going to blow the shofar in no place on any given year. That's just a travesty. So even though the rabbis were forced to forbid blowing the shofar in every place because they're afraid that you're going to carry it, which we said doesn't make too much sense, but that's what they said, but they want to leave one place where you could blow it. So they chose Yerushalayim because it's a holy city, but not because there's a specific reason to think people will carry less there. The fifth reason is the only one in my mind that really makes sense. Only there in Yerushalayim was it certain when it was Rosh Hashanah. And that connects to everything we've learned for the past 6 months.
And it also connects I was thinking about this in the first two words of the Mishnah that we thought.
Right. You get a gold star.
Yeah.
In other words, we've learned many, many, many months of going over all this stuff, right? That the new moon is seen by witnesses, and the Beit Din decides if we accept the testimony or not, and the Beit Din decides when it's Rosh Chodesh. And then when it decides, so everyone in Jerusalem knows that today's Rosh Chodesh, and the messengers go out to the rest of the country and the rest of the world, and they tell everyone that it was Rosh Chodesh on a certain day. And we know that there were no telegraphs and there were no telephones, and it took a long time for the messages to get to the diaspora.
And there were exceptions for breaking Shabbat.
There were, indeed so. And we know that almost always, by the 15th of the month, the messengers would get there and say 15 days ago was Rosh Chodesh. And since Sukkot and Pesach are in the 15th of the month, then by the time you have to keep a holiday, the messengers already got there. And even Yom Kippur, the 10th of the month, by then the messengers got to the diaspora. But the messengers couldn't get too far to tell people when Rosh Hashanah is, because Rosh Hashanah is the same day as Rosh Chodesh. Mm-hmm. So you have a strange situation in which you can't know when Rosh Hashanah is, except if you live in Yerushalayim. Right? You can't know when Rosh Hashanah is. So now what do we do? So we said what we do is the rabbis decreed keep Rosh Hashanah 2 days. Always 2 days. Even in Eretz Yisrael, keep it 2 days. Because even if you live even in just in Tel Aviv, you can't know if today is Rosh Hashanah or not, because it was decided just a few minutes ago over there in Yerushalayim, and you have no way of knowing. So they said keep 2 days just to make sure. Which means, now let's think about it. So you're keeping 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, and that way you're sure to hit the mark. And there's a mitzvah of blowing shofar, so you blow it 2 days, fine. What happens if one of those 2 days is Shabbat? So, if the day you're celebrating Rosh Hashanah today is Rosh Hashanah, and you're blowing the shofar, fine, the Torah told me to blow it. I'm not afraid of violating Shabbat. I'm doing a mitzvah. And if I do carry the shofar, well, I shouldn't have done that. But it's no reason to refrain from blowing, because blowing is a mitzvah. I don't refrain from mitzvah just because I'm afraid that I might break a different mitzvah, I blow. But what happens if today is a day I'm celebrating Rosh Hashanah, but it's really not? It's really not.
And it's Shabbat.
And it's Shabbat. Then it might not make so much sense for me to blow the shofar, because it's only a possibility of fulfilling a mitzvah, mm-hmm. and it's weighed against the possibility of breaking Shabbat. Mm-hmm. So now let's put it like this. If I'm holding Rosh Hashanah 2 days, then either of those days is not definitely Rosh Hashanah. And when it's Shabbat, there's definitely a fear of violating by carrying. So now we understand the Gemara about Rabbah that says that there's a decree of the rabbis not to blow lest you carry it. And I said, that's ridiculous. Yeah. Why should the rabbis prevent me from filling a mitzvah the right? Just because I might transgress. The answer is, Rabbah said what he said only because you don't know if it's Rosh Hashanah or not. It's always a safek. But that safek doesn't apply in the Mikdash. In the Mikdash, when it's Rosh Hashanah, you know it's Rosh Hashanah. And that's why you blow. That's the explanation of the Ritva in the 13th century in Spain. And to me, that's the explanation that makes the most sense. And let's see it inside in the Ritva, which is... Where's my Ritva? Give me a second. Oh, here it is. So it has the Rambam on the right side, the Ritva on the left-hand side. The Ritva is a student of the Ramban in Spain in the 1300s. I'm going to read in the bracket right here. Ulefi ha Hu sugya. It's over there. And according to that sugya, according to that passage, he's talking about our Babylonian Talmud. Mashma behedya. It is implied explicitly. Delo dechinan mitzvot shel Torah. That we don't push aside a mitzvah of Torah. Mishum zeirat Rabba, because of the decree of Rabba. Ella, except Hecha delo yadinen bikavua deyarcha, except where we don't know the setting of the month, the deciding of the month. Only when this is a fake, a doubt, do we make this, do this matter of setting aside the blowing because of the fear of carrying. Kagon shofar b'chol makom kodem achorban. For example, shofar in every place means except for the mikdash, kodem achorban, before the destruction. That's the Gemara, that's the Mishnah, according to the Ritba. And it makes perfect sense. And then this whole crazy thing of not blowing because you're afraid of violating a mitzvah Shabbat, now it makes sense. Because it's not that you're setting aside a certain mitzvah doraita because of a fear of violating doraita. You're setting aside a safek doraita in order not to violate a certain mitzvah doraita. In order to not have the fear of violating a certain mitzvah deraita. And that makes sense. And according to that, then in Jerusalem, when they knew it was Rosh Hashanah, they would blow because it's Rosh Hashanah. In all of Jerusalem, not just the Mikdash. Because in all of Jerusalem, you can know by word of mouth that it's now Rosh Hashanah. And that makes a lot of sense. And this really puts to rest all of the speculation about this crazy idea, why do we put aside the blowing because of a fear of violating? It's probably because of this, which of course connects everything that we learned in the past to this Mishnah.
So yeah. How does that explain the beginning of the Mishnah?
Ah, very good. It a little bit explains it, not completely, a little bit. Yeah. Because the expression Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah, again, it doesn't explain it completely. It doesn't explain it, but it just
alludes to it.
Prepares us for the idea that there's Rosh Hashanah that's Yom Tov, there's Rosh Hashanah that's not Yom Tov. Because there's a Safek. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the Safek we hold as a Yom Tov, but it's getting us ready for the idea that there's a Rosh Hashanah that is and Rosh Hashanah that isn't. Yeah. You missed the the meat. Okay, so with that, we can go back to where we were in the Mishnah. Yeah, so let's go on. This is question 7, and we're going to read on now in the rest of the Mishnah to deal with question 7. So in the Mishnah, on the page of Mishnah, we're in the last line of the right-hand column in the middle, after the period. Right over here. Mi shacharav beit mikdash hitkin Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai shiyu tokin b'chol makom sheish bo beit din. Translation, again beginning from the last 5 words of the right-hand column. From when was destroyed the house of the temple, decreed Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai that they will blow in every place that has a Beit Din. So let's now think, why should they blow in every place that has a Beit Din? Well, of course, it depends what it means, Beit Din. And like I said earlier, there are 3 different possibilities. It might mean every place in the world that has a Beit Din of 3, or every place in the world that has a Beit Din of 23, or the one place in the world that has a Beit Din of 71, which was Yavne. And secondly, I want to say, even if it means only a Beit Din of 71, Yavne, but then what happens if the Beit Din moves to a different city? So that's why it says, every place. Why doesn't it say Yavne, but it says every place, even if it means just Yavne, because that's where the Beit Din of 71 is. But if the Beit Din moves, as it did, to the Galil, then it says every place that has the Beit Din, even if it means the Beit Din of 71. But when it moves to Usha, when it moves to Pekin, when it moves to Beit Sharim in the north, then the halakha says that that one place where the Beit Din HaGadol, the Beit Din of 71 is, there we blow the shofar. So it might mean, again, just to summarize, it might mean every place where the Sanhedrin is, the Beit Din HaGadol, or it might mean every place where the Beit Din of 23, it might even mean any place where the Beit Din of even 3. So let's ask ourselves why. Why, when the Mikdash was destroyed, did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai say we should blow now in other places? Well, it makes a lot of sense. If we go according to the Ritba that we just talked about, that we blow on Rosh Hashanah, that falls on Shabbat, in a place where we're certain that it is Rosh Hashanah, well, in Yavne, or where the Beit Din HaGadol was, that's where they knew it was Rosh Hashanah, because that's where they accepted the witnesses. Mm. Right? So it makes perfect sense. If it's talking about a Beit Din of 23 or a Beit Din of 3, then it only makes sense according to the other explanations of why Jerusalem was different. Not because that's where they knew it was Rosh Hashanah, but perhaps because of any of the four other reasons that we had there. Ein Shvut Mikdash wouldn't fit, that there's no rabbinic laws, prohibitions in the Mikdash wouldn't fit if we're talking about cities with a Beit Din of 23 or 3. But the matter it's a private domain, well, that also wouldn't fit. But that there are many sages, you might say any place as a Beit Din, there are sages there that are going to prevent carrying on Shabbat. That could make some sense. Or it could be just that, again, the rabbis wanted that there be places that they blow, because you can't have a year without blowing. Okay. Let's see what other questions I want to talk about. And then it says one more opinion, which is the last word of the top line on the left-hand column. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Lo hitkin Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai Ela v'yavne bilvad. Didn't decree Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai except in Yavne exclusively. So it's clear, only Yavne. Only Yavne do you blow on Rosh Hashanah, the Pesach, and Shabbat. And that, of course, is arguing with the first opinion. And of course, as Brooks asked earlier, and I said we'd get to it, Rabbi Elazar is not arguing with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's arguing with the anonymous source that brought down the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a takana, made a decree, that we blow the shofar on Shabbat.
He's improving it.
Not improving, but now I have to explain it. Takana exactly? Rabbi Elazar says the takana was only that we blow the shofar on Yavne. Whereas the Tanakhama, the first opinion, said no, it was that we blew in every place as a Beit Din.
Right.
There's a machloket of what the takana was. Clearly it was a takana. No one's arguing when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made the takana. We're arguing what he said. Rabbi Elazar explains it and understands it and remembers it very simply. He said we blew in Yavne, period. That's all. Whereas the other opinion says we blew in every place as a Beit Din, and it's not clear what that means. A Beit Din of 71, a Beit Din of 23, a Beit Din of 3. That's not clear. Okay. Let's see. What should we do now? We did that. Let's read the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. Let's read the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, which is this sheet. Right. So says the Rambam in the upper right-hand corner. This is Mishneh Torah the Rambam. Hilchot Shabbat Perek Bet. The laws of Shofar, the second chapter. And it's in my bracket. It's Halacha Chet. Kshegazru shelo litkoa b'Shabbat, lo gazru ele b'makom she'ein bo Beit Din. Translation: when they gazru, when they decreed Shelo litkor b'Shabbat, not to blow on Shabbat. Lo gazru, they didn't decree el except the makom she'ain bo beit din, except in a place there's no beit din. The only decree was not to blow where there's no beit din. Aval bizman shaya beit mikdash kayam, haya beit din hagadol b'Yushalayim. But when the Beit Mikdash was in existence, there was a Beit Din Gadol, the great Beit Din in Yerushalayim. Hayu akol tokin b'Yerushalayim. Everyone used to blow in Yerushalayim b'Shabbat.
Is the Beit Din Hagadol the Sanhedrin?
Or yes, yes. So the Rambam very subtly makes an important point. He says it's not that there's two different stages in the Mishnah. Stage number one, that you blow in the Mikdash on Shabbat. Stage number two, after the Mikdash, you blow in places of Beit Din. He says originally when they blew in Yerushalayim on Shabbat, it was because of the Beit Din. It's the same principle. It's not a principle of Mikdash. It's a principle of Beit Din. So there's no change in principles. The Rambam claims that the principle was always that you blow in the city of the Beit Din Hagadol. And Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai didn't make a new takana. He just explained that now that the Beit Din is in Yavne, we continue the same principle. So the Rambam is very, very subtle here, but he's giving us a really new reading of the Mishnah. It's not a din in Mikdash. It's not a law of Mikdash. It was a law of Beit Din all along. Where is the Beit Din Gadol? That's where you blow, according to the Rambam. That is enough. That's enough. That was the point that I wanted to see in the Rambam. Okay. Now, we're going to spend the last 20 minutes on the next Mishnah, which simply adds background and adds information to the first Mishnah. Yeah, okay. So, the second Mishnah says, it's four lines down from the top of the page in the left-hand column, says, V'od zot haita Yerushalayim yitera al Yavne. I'll read that again. V'od zot haita Yerushalayim yitera al Yavne. Which means, word by word I'll translate, Od is more or furthermore. Zot, this, Haita, was Yerushalayim, Yetera, added or advantageous or preferable or greater, right. Al Yavne, then Yavne. In other words, in a further matter, Yerushalayim is greater than Yavne. In a second matter, Yerushalayim is greater than Yavne. Shekol iyo shehi ro'a v'shom'at v'krova v'yichola lavo tokin. Translation. Shekol iyo, that any city, shehi ro'a, that sees, v'shom'at, and hears, and krova, and is near, v'yichola lavo, and can come, tokin, they blow. Uve'yavne, lo hayu tokin, ele b'beit din bilvad. But in Yavne, they didn't blow, except and the Beit Din exclusively. So first let's talk about this globally, then we'll go into the details.
Yeah, but could you say that one more time? Any city that sees and hears...
Any city that sees and hears and is near and can come. Whatever that means.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
So what it means is the following. Any city that is in the vicinity of Yerushalayim, such that you can see from the city you're in, the people in Jerusalem who would blow, and you can hear them blowing, and you're close, whatever close means, and you chola lavo, and you can come, in other words, that there are open roads between your city and Jerusalem, if you have those four conditions, you can blow in your city as well. Now, just think, if you know Jerusalem a little bit, the city of Jerusalem is just the old city. In these days, you don't have a large city. And a neighborhood that we would call like the new city, or Yamin Moshe, or Talpiot, those are separate cities. Separate cities. So here you have the old city of Jerusalem, and you have people who live half a mile away in a separate neighborhood. We call it a neighborhood. They call it a city. Right? These other neighborhoods that are near Jerusalem, do they have the deen, the law of Jerusalem, or not? And the answer is, we test it with these four conditions. Can you hear a shofar blown in Jerusalem in these other cities? Can you see the shofar being blown? Are you close to Jerusalem, which means 2,000 amot, 2,000 steps basically? And can you come? Is there an open road, or is there a river blocking, for example, your access to Jerusalem? A river, we call it a stream today. Yerushalayim doesn't have rivers. And we understand the conjunction that says see and hear and close and come as four conditions that have to be met. It's not or, it's and. If you have these four conditions met, then whether you're in Talpiot, you mean Moshe, or the new city, you can also blow on Rosh Hashanah, falls on Shabbat. So what we're doing here is expanding the definition of Yerushalayim. Whereas in Yavne, it was only in the Beit Din itself. Now it's only in the compound of the Beit Din where they could blow the shofar. So now I want to ask a question. Remember the machlok between Rashi and the Rambam? We're going fast today.
The machlok between Rashi and Rambam?
Do you remember the machlok between Rashi and the Rambam concerning the definition of Mikdash?
Yeah.
Right. Rashi said Mikdash is only the building or Har Habayit. The Rambam said Mikdash is the whole city. So now my question is, this second Mishnah we read right now, does it shed light? Does it help us to decide which of the two opinions, Rashi or Rambam, fits more in context?
Rambam.
And the answer is yes, and it's the Rambam.
Right,
because if this Mishnah is saying that Yerushalayim is greater than Yavne, it says Yerushalayim. It doesn't say Mikdash. And it says that we're adding to Yerushalayim even the outlying neighborhoods. That seems to assume that Yerushalayim includes the whole city and not just the Mikdash. And indeed, according to this Mishnah, it seems like Rashi is wrong, and the commentators ask, how could Rashi have said what he said? It really does seem very clearly that Mikdash means Yerushalayim. And this, that's the first Mishnah. And the second Mishnah says not only Yerushalayim, but even Talpiot, and even Armon HaNatziv, and even all the other neighbors, Talpiot, and Yamin Moshe, the new city, all of them are included in those definitions. Whereas Yavne was only the compound of the Beit Din. So now I have a question. Well, let's look at the questions I asked here. Well, this is the first question that... okay. So this is on the question sheet B, which is Mishnah 2, question 1. Does this Mishnah refer to Yerushalayim during a particular historical period, or Yerushalayim at all times? Think about that a little bit before you answer. Think about it deeply.
Does what? The entire Mishnah? The first?
It says that Yerushalayim is greater than Yavne.
Oh,
Yerushalayim when? Yerushalayim when? At a certain time, at all times?
When there was a Beis HaMikdash standing, or when there wasn't? That...
Right, that's the question. It might be Yerushalayim when there was a Mikdash, or it might be Yerushalayim all the time. That's a big, big question, and also relates to Halakha today, right? What do you do now? Let's say today. Today. Let's say the Halakha is that the law of Beit Din is only a Beit Din of 71. And there's no Beit Din of 71 today. But do we blow the shofar in Yerushalayim today? Well, it says here in the Mishnah, black and white, it says, "B'mikdash hayu tokin," in the Mikdash they used to blow. and it means, according to the Rambam, the city of the Mikdash. So do we blow in Yerushalayim today? Halachas, we don't, but according to the Mishnah. So it's not clear. It's not clear. It could be that it says Yerushalayim is greater than Yavne, than in Yerushalayim, and all the environs we blow. Does that mean Yerushalayim as a geographical entity, or only Yerushalayim of the time of the Mikdash? It's not clear. But most of the commentators says it only means Yerushalayim of the time of the Mikdash. Right? And that's really the halacha today. That Yerushalayim, when it had the Mikdash, that's when we used to blow there in its environs. But when it was destroyed, you don't blow there anymore. You only blow in a place where there's a Beit Din. It depends how you understand the Mishnah. Beit Din of 71, Beit Din of 23, Beit Din of 3. So that means that Yerushalayim of before the during the Mikdash's time is greater than Yavna after the Mikdash's time. And what it's saying, it's not comparing Yerushalayim and Yavna at the same historical time. It's Yerushalayim as it used to be had a greater law, a better law, more inclusive law than Yavna has at its time. That's probably the case. That's what Rashi holds, and that's what most of the commentators say. So now question number two. What is difficult with the usage of the word ode? I forgot to write word.
What is difficult?
The word ode means furthermore, right? Furthermore, in this Yerushalayim is greater than Yavne, etc. So what does furthermore indicate?
It's expounding on the previous Mishnah.
Right? But it's assuming that in the previous Mishnah, Yerushalayim was greater than Yavne in something. In other words, when you say furthermore, you're adding a second point. So our second Mishnah says, that Yerushalayim is a more inclusive law than Yavne. But that's a category of furthermore, which means that there must be in the previous Mishnah a category in which basically Yerushalayim is greater than Yavne. What is it? Where do we see Yerushalayim being greater than Yavne in the first Mishnah? So that the second Mishnah adds a furthermore to it. And the question I'm asking is not, it's not clear. It's not clear at all. And the truth is I've even forgotten what the possible answers are. I have to think myself. In other words, you would really think that the second Mishnah should not begin with the word ode. It just say, in the following thing, Yerushalayim, as it used to be, is greater than Yavne. So now that Yerushalayim, it was all the environs, Yavne, it's only there with the Beit Din. But by using the word ode, furthermore, it's intimating that there's something earlier in which Yerushalayim has a better din, a better law than Yavne.
Could it be related to what follows, though? Could you be saying, furthermore, it's greater than Yavne, because...
Ah, good point.
Because any city that could see here and is close and come...
Yeah.
That was relative to Jerusalem, but that was not held in the when it was in Yavne, and that is...
Mm-hmm. That's not the way commentators understood it, but looking at the language... That doesn't fit too well into the language, but perhaps you could say that.
I mean, do we learn that anywhere else? That any city that could see and hear and is close and could come to Jerusalem, you know, could.
No, we learn it from here. It's written. Or, it's written here.
Okay.
Okay. So what you're saying again, it's not the most comfortable in the language, but it. Perhaps could be, and that would solve our problem. But let's say we don't go in your direction. Let's think for a minute or two or three. What could it be? I'm just trying to think.
That it preceded Yavne.
Oh, wait. Now I remember.
Oh.
Again, it goes back to the Rambam. In Yerushalayim, it's the whole city. in Yavne, it's only the area of the Beit Din. Then the second Mishnah says more than that. In Yerushalayim, it's not only the city, it's even the surrounding areas. Right? That makes the most sense.
Right.
In Yerushalayim, it's the whole city, in Yavne, it's just the Beit Din. And then furthermore, Yerushalayim even includes the environs and not just the area of the Beit Din. And by the way, that means that in Yavne, they only blew the shofar in the compound of the Beit Din. The whole city would come together in that one place to hear the shofar, and you couldn't go to any other place. Just by the Beit Din.
What in these conditions that you see here close and can come, what would the sea refer to? I mean, if you're close enough to come to Jerusalem and you hear by word of mouth, I mean, of course you would be able to see.
Yeah, there's a discussion of that. So they say that it's to rule out a possibility that you could, there are places you can hear and not see, seeing and not hear. Right? If there's a mountain in there or a fog, no, I take away the fog, it has to be a permanent obstacle. Again, being that we live in a modern world of mass communication and that Yerushalayim has had its topography so changed, it's hard for us to imagine, and it's hard for me to imagine, but apparently in the ancient world, without all the noise we have today, you could sometimes hear for great distances, and you can see for great distances without the different types of pollution we have. I'll tell you, I sometimes experience this where I live in Israel in Alon Shvut, where there's no traffic on Shabbat. When I'd wake up early in the morning, Shabbat morning, and go walking in the hills, you could hear for miles. And it's something I'd never experienced before. I'd walk out of my house, and you can hear the chicken coops over a mile and a half away. You can hear the chickens. And you can't hear that on a Monday.
It's built on a mountain. Yerushalayim is high.
Yeah, I'm talking about where I live outside of Yerushalayim. But there's so many things that today we can't hear and we can't see that people used to see and hear.
And you can discern how sound is carried on the wind.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah. Like, also, sorry, on Rosh Hashanah, it happens to me every year, Rosh Hashanah, but there's no traffic at all in the Alon Shvut, and you can hear for miles. When the wind changes, you can hear or not hear a Beit Knesset 3 miles away. You can hear the people davening. And then the wind changes, you don't hear anymore, and it's so funny, it comes in and out.
Yeah. Okay, but what I'm asking about would be a city that you could see and not hear. Okay.
A city that you can see and not hear.
See from, yeah, okay. But what would you see?
You can see, not hear.
What would you have to see to know that it was okay to walk?
That's a good question. Some say it's to see the person blowing.
Okay.
Others say it's to see the Mikdash.
Yeah, but you could always see the Mikdash. If you could see it, you could always see the Mikdash, but you wouldn't know that was okay. It was okay then to walk that distance on that specific day.
No, wait a second. This is not that you go and walk. It's just that you're close enough in order to walk.
It's your own. Halachically. It's your own. You can actually blow the shofar where you are.
You can blow the shofar where you are if you're close enough to see and hear where they're blowing.
Right, okay.
Again, then you'd ask yourself, why do I have to blow if I can hear from there? But the answer is because of Kavanah. They're only intending to be Motzi, the people that are around them. That are, they're not intending to be Motzi me, who's a mile away. Right. Yeah. Okay, so I think we are basically finished. Anything else that I wanted to show us? Let's look for a minute here. We did the Ritva, which was really interesting.
Now, what if I'm in a town that can only hear a city that can hear Jerusalem? And I hear that. Now, how do I know that the person that's blowing in that city is actually, I forget the term, you know, Motzi, is of age and is, you know.
So what's exactly the question? What exactly are you asking?
You know, I was asking, you know, could it then, you know, be compounded, the distance, you know, by hearing, perhaps hearing, you know, a shofar from a city that is nearby to Jerusalem. I can't hear Jerusalem.
I can't hear Jerusalem.
Because you can hear the city that's blowing because they can hear Jerusalem.
Yeah.
So then it just becomes like this echo effect that you...
Yeah, so there's Telpio, blow.
Right.
And I'm in, I don't know where,
Further out. Yeah.
And I hear the shofar.
Yeah. And you're not sure if it's from Yerushalayim or from...
Or maybe I know it's impossible to hear from Jerusalem, but I hear Talpiot.
So?
Can I depend on that and then blow? I mean, according to this, no.
No, of course not. Right, of course not.
Yeah. Right.
So I want to end by just telling you a story. This Mishnah is a very famous Mishnah, and there's a lot of literature on this Mishnah. There are articles written about it. I once taught the Gemara on this Mishnah for over a month, the whole month of Elul. It's very fascinating. One of the many questions is concerning this law of Beit Din. We said that according to one opinion, everywhere where there's a Beit Din, you're allowed to blow. According to the Rif, one of the teachers of the teacher of the teacher of the Rambam, it means a Beit Din of three. That any place where there's a Beit Din of three, you can blow. Which means that in most places, you do blow on Rosh Hashanah, the Tlos, and Shabbat. And that's the way the Rif has the halakha. And others say it's just a Beit Din of 23. And there's more, there's a number of places that used to have a Beit Din of 23. And there have been disagreements for thousands of years. Where do we blow? Where do we not blow in Rosh Hashanah, Tlos, and Shabbat? Now, of course, also comes up a question, according to the Ritva, that you do blow where it's certainly Rosh Hashanah. What happens since they fixed the calendar, and we do know it's Rosh Hashanah, should we blow or not then? Right? Obviously, halacha we don't, but according to the Ritva, perhaps we should. If we know that's Rosh Hashanah, how could we put aside a certain mitzvah deraita just because of the fear of transgressing a different deraita? According to the Ritva, we should be blowing when we know it's Rosh Hashanah, but, of course, but we don't. So all this literature came to a head beginning in 1880. There was a chacham, there was a rabbi in Jerusalem, the name of Rabbi Akiva Schlesinger. I like to tell his story because it's the same name. And beginning in 1880, he began to write a series of articles proving we should be blowing the shofar in Yerushalayim. One, because there's a Beit Din of three. And number two, because he claimed that there's a basis to say from our Mishnayot that the status of Yerushalayim is forever. It doesn't end with the destruction. Even though, according to the simple reading, it should end with destruction. But he said, let's take two different opinions, even though there are minority opinions, put both of them together, it says blow. In other words, if you hold that a Beit Din of three is a place to blow, then Yerushalayim we blow, a Beit Din of three. And if you hold that Yerushalayim always retains a status, then you blow. Two reasons to blow. So he wrote a series of articles, which apparently were not accepted by the major rabbanim, but we have eyewitness accounts that in 1904, he went into a bomb shelter and blew. No one could hear. Then you ask the question, how do we know? So I don't remember who was there, but it's a well-known story in Yerushalayim that Rabbi Akiva Schlesinger in 1904 blew the shofar in Rosh Hashanah that fell on Shabbat.
Huh. Is there a street named after him somewhere?
I don't know. If there's so many streets in Yerushalayim named after the Rabbanim, there should be, right?
There's a bomb shelter.
I actually saw two different accounts. One said a bomb shelter, and one said just he went into his apartment, closed the windows and doors, closed the shades, and blew.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's it. So what's up?